I'm Richard Porter.
And I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and a little bit too much about Shakin' Stevens.
I'm starting to feel Christmassy.
Are you?
And which is kind of convenient, really. And heard that Shakin' Stevens song the other day, and it reminded me of how funny the music video is. I forgot how jerky Shakin' Stevens is. It's very jerky.
Is he as jerky as Suggs?
No. If it was like a is this like a Beaufort scale of jerkiness?
Yeah, well, it's the Suggs scale, isn't it?
It's the Suggs jerkiness. He's not as jerky as Suggs.
Maybe it's the Curtis scale.
Ian Curtis, yes.
But Ian Curtis is more jittery, I would say. Suggs is your angular movement king.
He's a sort of diagonal shoulders. Yeah, I'm thinking Shakin' Stevens. Actually, Shakin' Stevens might be a little bit more like someone keeps licking a 9-volt battery while you're trying to sing a jolly Christmas song. He is so good. He's proper, like, whatever he is, Swansea spec Elvis.
Yeah. And,
it's a good song. But the girl who is, I think they filmed it in Lapland or somewhere, the girl that's in the sleigh with him in the video, you have to watch the music video. Honestly, it looks like, you know, when you've been hit in the face by a powerful, fast travelling football on a really cold day, and it smacks, it hurts for so long. You know, when it throbs, it sort of throbs and glows. That's sort of what her face looks like. So I always get the impression there'd been some sort of incident just before filming, and she'd had to pretend.
Shakin' Stevens just saw a Gola ball on the floor, couldn't help himself, absolutely howled it accidentally towards his co-star's face.
And he didn't realise he did a proper, like, curler, and it bent round, it bananas.
Oh, yeah.
A high
speed.
And
it was carrying so much power, like, real, you know, he's sweet right foot on him, old Shaky.
Oh, completely. And not only that, it had been left outside for several nights in Scandinavia, so it had a hard crust of ice all over it. It was carrying extra weight, and I think that's what it did. It got her straight in the face, and then she was like, bollocks, I've got to do this Shakin' Stevens fucking music video. Anyway, great song, though. Great song.
I just looked up Shakin' Stevens. He's still alive.
He made an album about 2 years ago, and I heard two tracks from it, and they were good.
Really?
I kid you not, I'm not just saying this. I was pleasantly surprised. I thought, wow, he's gone away and kind of put, yeah, it was before the pandemic. He put right. pen to paper and actually done some good shizzle.
Fair play.
I want to know what he drives, though. Got no idea.
I was just going to say the same thing, because I've got in my head, I think, that kind of spec of old school entertainer who achieved fame in the 80s. I just see from his Wikipedia page that he lives in Marlow in Buckinghamshire. A solid place for famous in the 80s, made a few quid people to live.
Oh, that is. Yeah, there's
really
an awful lot of Rolls shadows about there, isn't there?
Yeah, a lot of shads.
He couldn't have afforded a shad, do you think? I don't know.
I don't know. That's funny, isn't it? You just don't...
I feel like because he had this sort of American persona, this pseudo-American persona... I wonder whether he went for, I don't know, some sort of 80s Cadillac that isn't brilliant, you know.
Oh,
and
man.
And is still rocking it.
Well, this is uncanny. There's a picture, if you Google Shakin' Stevens' car.
Oh, gosh.
There is a picture of him sitting on the bonnet of an 80s, but I would say early 80s Cadillac.
Oh, my gosh,
so
there we
old
go.
Old school, body-on-frame type.
Yes.
A Seville, but it looks to me like it might be what the Americans would have called a mid-sized at that point. So not your full kahuna. So your theory about it being not quite. But then there's another photo of Shaky leaning on a shad.
You're joking. So hang on, he's got
now,
both.
There's no suggestion in this picture that it's actually his shad. I mean, he could have just seen it in the street. But and then there's another
What, that pre-Instagram era of pretending something's yours when it probably isn't?
Well, there's no such thing as a new idea, is there? I'm sure maybe Shaky was in the vanguard of pretending things aren't his or his. There's a Getty Images have a stock photo of Shaky, and he is once again leaning on this Cadillac, light blue. It's a colour picture, this.
I can probably tell you what model this is, but the listeners don't want to hear me tapping away on my old-fashioned sounding keyboard.
I think this is the black and white picture of him sitting on the bonnet of this Cadillac is the photo from the back sleeve of one of his albums.
Of course.
That's how much. And then there's another photo here of him standing in front of the Cadillac, and it has it's S red, so it's late 70s, and it's on UK plates, so it's obviously in Britain. And I'm going to say that's Shaky's car.
I'm going to say that's his car, because he couldn't have gone down the 50s Cadillac route like Elvis, because that would have been a little bit too expensive. But yeah, that looks like a Seville. That is, yeah, I reckon that's a Seville, which was a mid-size Cadillac of that era. It wasn't the full Fleetwood or something like that. Could be a Coupe de Ville.
Well, it's four-door, isn't it? So
if it's four-door, I haven't got the picture. If it's four-door, it's Seville.
I think you're right. But not the bustle-back one, so it's pre that. It's just a normal saloon that. Shape.
But just imagine, if you possibly can, if Shaken was like, look, Shaken was gonna get himself a Cadillac. He's like, I'm living up to this. I've got to get a Cadillac. However, yeah, my money might run out. It's got to have some level of economy. I know. I'm going to get the diesel one, because they did do that GMC engine diesel Cadillac, didn't they? Which almost destroyed Cadillac's career, I believe.
Yes, it was famously
because
terrible.
It used the same block as the petrol, and I think that was precisely its problem. It was weak.
Yeah, they used to pop gaskets and all sorts. It was the same one of those in the same sort of era. They did that cylinder deactivation. Which is quite commonplace now.
Yeah, it was this era.
But wasn't it? It was just absolutely rubbish because they didn't really have the computing power or the know-how to do it properly. No. And that also kind of torpedoed their reputation a bit, didn't it?
I had a friend who had a Coupe de Ville. It was this era, 81, 82, I think. And it had cylinder deactivation. And it would frequently just decide to run on four cylinders, which used to piss him off immensely. Because you can imagine, that was not a lot of power when the whole engine wasn't a great deal of power.
I was going to say, what was that thing doing at best? Anyway, it was probably like 153 horsepower with all eight running. So
I can just imagine Shaking Stevens in an early 80s Cadillac actually driving home for Christmas to the family somewhere in Wales. It'd be one of the sort of pit towns, I reckon. Yeah. And of course, it's a bit bloody cold and slippery.
I just saw this, actually. It says he's from Cardiff.
Okay, so Cardiff's Elvis. Cardiff's Elvis is heading back for Christmas. And he's in
the Cate's Elvis.
And he's in He's heading back and the weather is awful. Really, really quite slithery and cold. And he's in this blimmin'. You know how power assisted the steering is on those. You could use your tongue to keep it on the straight and narrow. And he hits an awful lot of black ice. And, of course, it's still on the American white walls, so those tyres are good
Rock hard.
No, they're good for 90,000. Good for 90,000, but not so good in sub-zero Welsh conditions.
I just looked. He was actually born in Ely, in Cardiff. So
he's not particularly relevant. We've just devoted so much time of the podcast to Shaken Stevens.
I tell you what else about Shaken Stevens. Yes. Modern era Shaken Stevens.
Yeah.
At a glance, he often seems to look a bit like Simon Mayo.
Does he? Has he aged better than Mayo, do we reckon? Or
I mean, you've got to say that he's looking all right, I think.
Yeah. Do you reckon he survives?
I've lost it now. But
we were saying this, I think, like the other week about women E17 with their Christmas song. Do you think Shaken Stevens' Christmas song keeps him afloat? I'd love to know.
You know how Google, one of the things, if you type in a celebrity's name, almost inevitably it will auto prompt you with net worth after it.
Yes.
So I've just done that with Shaken Stevens. I mean, it's all going to be rubbish, isn't it? Because they just never seem to.
Well,
they just make it all up, don't they? But this net worth, celebrity net worth website claims that he's worth $20 million.
$20 million?
Yeah. But then, you know, one of the things that may add weight to him doing all right is it does say his single Merry Christmas Everyone has re-entered the charts in the UK every year since 2007. I'm surprised it's not more than that, actually, but
gosh. That's a lot. That's impressive.
Oh, you see now here this, and then Smooth Radio are claiming he's worth 15 million quid, so
gosh, he's not buying a diesel. He's not buying
a
diesel
Cadillac. Whoa. Here we go. There's an NME story here about how much musicians make from Christmas songs.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
And Because I was, and that's funny, they start by referencing About a Boy. You remember the book and the movie of the same name? The story of that was always the lead character is surviving on the royalties from a Christmas song that his dad wrote, I think, isn't
that's
it?
That's right.
And I always thought, really? Is that a plausible thing? But so they think that Slade make about... Bloody hell! They make £512,000 a year.
They make half a million sheets a year. Get out.
Yeah.
From that, the shouting's... Bloody hell.
Yeah.
It's Christmas.
Well, the Daily Mail in 2016, so that probably won't be true, but they claim that it's actually closer to 1 million a year now from that song.
£1 million a year. Should we pen an attempt?
Well, I've always thought that, because there's a bit of a dearth of them, aren't there? It's like, when was the last new, fresh Christmas song that actually caught on? I think it's probably Mariah Carey, wasn't it? Or maybe some... Has Bublé done anything original?
Bublé... Oh, has he done anything original? That's a good idea.
Because he just... His Christmas stuff is often covers,
Coldplay's Christmas song does okay. Christmas Lights. Or not?
Yeah,
do you think it's been fully accepted yet? Because it takes a while for acceptance. Mm. Universal acceptance, you know, across the ages. And the gates are open to this sort of, like, you are now allowed in the kind of being played forever.
Yeah, well, that's it. You have to become truly sort of seeped into the fabric of the nation. Yeah. And I wonder whether some of these songs are actually played outside of the UK as well. I mean, Mariah Carey must be.
Of course.
I wonder if Slade gets any airtime elsewhere.
I don't know.
Stop the Cavalry by Jonah Louie.
Yes,
It's an odd Christmas song, isn't it? Well, these figures are slightly out of date.
It's my daughter's favourite.
Is it?
It's my daughter's favourite Christmas song. She's 12.
Well, every time she's streaming that song, she's contributing probably like 0.01 pence towards Jonah Louie's annual income of £120,000 a year from that song alone.
Okay, so 120 grand. Okay, if he was to live fairly frugally, I can't imagine he made a shed load of music during his active music career.
He's quoted as saying that that song contributes 50% of his income, which is like, all right, Jonah. Don't think that. You're getting 120 grand from other songs as well.
Well, what?
I don't think musicians earn that much these
days. Well, unless
he's
a removal man or something, and he's doing all right.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually a recruitment consultant, but I did that Cavalry song in my spare time.
Wait a minute. I want Shaken Stevens to re-record his Merry Christmas, Everyone. Go back out to Lapland to make a new music video, but he has to go out in a 1981 Cadillac on very summer tires. and they're all there's ceiling issues with the tires and the wheels. So every
like my
night,
old Jeep Cherokee.
Yes, right.
Park it in the wrong way, and a little crack in the alloy lets some of the air out.
Yeah. So every night, Shaken loses at least 8-9 psi in one of the tyres, but he just can't be asked to keep pumping it up. It's just too much. So he regularly drives around with one of the front tyres properly, like, leaning over on the bead at like sort of like 9-10-11 psi.
And but it's from behind the wheel, you can't really feel it because of heavily over assisted steering and incredibly slack damping. It just, it's no real discernible effect on the handling either way. Bad news for Shaken Stevens. This NME article reckons that song pulls in about £130,000 worth of royalties every year. But he didn't write the song.
Didn't he?
A man called Bob Heatley wrote the song.
Oh.
So he gets the cash. Shaky gets, so this article claims, between 5 and 10 grand. So not to be sniffed at, because it's free money at this point, isn't it? He doesn't have to do anything for it.
Of course.
But we are back down to, I think I'll just let the Cadillac keep running on 7 cylinders rather than spend the money having it looked at.
So,
territory.
Is he still got maybe a diesel Seville? And he's still just kind of tickling it along as best as possible. Maybe running it on a bit of veg oil. Maybe Cardiff Takeaway drains off the chip oil and gives it to Shaken.
Yeah, pop down City Road, get a few takeaways to chip in, and off he goes.
That's brilliant.
With a huge... And it also makes him feel nostalgic for when he was on Top of the Pops and they used to go a bit giddy with the dry ice back in the day because there's this enormous cloud follows him around wherever he goes. Of dense white smoke.
Oh, a cold start and a high idle on one of those, leaving it outside to defrost for a bit. Oh, yeah.
It just sound like a fleet of dumper trucks. Ding, 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 ding.
That'd be awful. It would. It just ruin. It would ruin any of the effect you were trying to achieve with the Cadillac, I would say.
As Britain's leading podcast about Christmas songs and how much royalty money they put in, I'll just leave you with this one. It's estimated, and this article is a year old. It's estimated that Mariah Carey's "All I Want for Christmas Is You" has earned in royalties, I presume this is in its lifetime, $60 million.
6-0?
6-0-0-0-0.
We need to pen something. Just to see if there's a chance it could get through. Because even if it earns $5,000 a year,
it's free money.
Yeah. Well, that means every year possibly I could buy Hillman Avenger.
You know that Christmas song? What did the guy who wrote it do? Well, he just blew it all on Hillman Avengers in the end.
Yeah. He saved them.
Actually, he just couldn't stop buying them. I like changing words in songs. Heart Saab game that we talked about a while back and all that. But I've just quite childishly at the moment, I'm just going around the house changing Christmas to piss flaps.
Oh, interesting. So not one that the kids can get involved with then.
No, it's not one to show the children. Also, it doesn't make any sense. All I want for piss flaps is you. Doesn't make any sense.
All I want
last
for
piss flaps, I gave you my heart.
All I want for piss flaps is you. It's like replacing a genital area with your face. Basically.
I hadn't thought about that.
All I want for piss flaps.
It's because there are two things that make me laugh. In this one is the start of the Slade song with Noddy Holder just going, "It's piss flaps," and Bublé's. What's that one he does?
He's so smooth.
I'm watching it for better. Please come home for Christmas, isn't it? I think. But the backing singers just go, "Christmas."
The snow just falling.
Christmas. And so I just like singing along going, "Piss flaps." Piss flaps. And that keeps me amused.
Actually, that's got me giggly. I'm going to try that one tonight.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know.
When I crack open my can of port. Yeah.
you're going straight for the fizzy port.
I've got to say, I got handed as a gift at the Late Break Show Somerset tour event that's just gone by a lovely guy that I don't remember the name of, which I'm really sorry about. And he handed me a 10-year-old aged port, a quality looking bottle of festive booze, and I'm going to cherish it. I'm not going to drink it all in one sitting, that would be absurd, and I'd end up with gout and probably 3 ulcers. Yeah,
why not wash down an entire quarter of Stilton with that lovely port and see how quickly the gout comes on?
Oh, gosh, it'd be hard, wouldn't it? I'll tell you what, though.
Did this chap explain why he was giving you port specifically?
Yes, because he said, "I want you to drink it and do a live Christmas Q&A on YouTube like you did last year, because it was so brilliant. It went wrong and I was speed drinking out of kind of stress and worry, which is not something I would recommend to the public. But you know what it's like, you're sort of going twice or maybe 3 times quicker out of nervousness, because we had some technical issues. Yeah, and I'm going to say I probably kind of, got a bit slurry at a few points, and I was worried I'd ruined it all, and the feedback was, that was quite funny, Johnny, you should do that again. So I'm considering doing it again. I'm not saying I'm going to, definitely. I'm considering it. But maybe we should do it, Rich. Maybe you could come on board. Couple of tumblers of port.
I would quite like to try and replicate your patented pint of Bailey's trick.
Oh, that one. Well,
we've got some Baileys as well. My wife bought some the other day. You know it's Christmas when there's Baileys in the house.
Yeah, we'll fold out a couple of those latex trays of ice into a pint glass. Tip it all over.
My wife bought some of those latex ice trays, but they're with very small cubes.
Yeah, they're a false
economy.
And
she also brought some very big ones, which I like, because if you're doing something like a Negroni, and you know I like a Negroni, they're good with that one big cube of ice. Nice.
You only need one
cube.
But
if you're making something else, like a Bailey's or a gin and tonic or something, tiny cubes, can't be doing with it. And I actually snuck the old ice cube trays, which are normal size, back into the freezer. And then my wife went, "We don't need these anymore. We've got these new ones." I was like,
Oh, brilliant.
So, yeah, Ice Wars. in our
I'm good at sneaking things back in. I've done it a lot, actually. In fact, I've just done it because I've been filling a skip today, which is something I'm adamantly against, but we're decluttering. So,
which bit are you adamantly against?
I just don't like filling skips with things. I feel like it should either just be recycled, rehomed, or just gradually siphoned off into
I know it's a bit different where you are because you've got a drive and your road is quite quiet.
Yeah.
But often skips are in fact a recycling centre, aren't they? Because if you leave a skip, like if you left a skip outside my place here in London,
I'd be full within minutes.
Well, yeah, but also then people pillage, don't they? They just come and take stuff that looks interesting or useful.
So, yeah, that's true.
I mean, my old flat, there was a skip. One of the neighbours had a skip outside. And I once saw, I was in the front room, and this guy drove past and suddenly absolutely anchored it in an old Vectra.
I was just about to ask
reversed
you
in a very, you know, right back, and then just leapt out and grabbed something from the skip. I couldn't even see what it was, and then jumped back in the Vectra. And it's like, what a hawkeye he was to have spotted whatever he'd seen.
Drive-by skip licking.
Yeah,
that's
was like
amazing.
Real kind of smash and grab, but it was the aggressiveness of the braking and reversing that really drew attention to it.
I was hoping he might have done a sort of like skip grab ghost riding. So he leaves the car kind of coasting in second, jumps out. Knows he's only got to lift this sort of office chair off the top of the pile and jumps back into the car with it while it's just sort of like ticking over in second, still in gear. Going down the road. I mean, it would definitely end in tears if you had cars down either side of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Vectra Ghost Rider would just be brilliant, wouldn't it? The skip. I used to skip lick when I lived in London because there's some incredible
skip
stuff.
Pick.
Yeah. There's some great gear that people throw out, but trust me, the stuff I'm throwing out, I'm making sure is not great. Although I did find some stuff that had been put out that it was like, no, that's not going out. That's coming back in.
Are we talking about bits for cars here?
There are some car bits, but it's mostly kind of household related. Shelving units that nobody really seems to want anymore, and kids stuff.
Well, there's a type of item, isn't there, that I think we all have in our houses, which is you have no use for it anymore. It's not quite nice enough or pristine enough to give to charity.
No.
But it still has some service life left in it.
Yeah.
What do you do with it? The other thing you can do, if you live in a city, is just leave it outside your front door, you know, on the path outside.
With a big sign saying, free, take me, or...
Well, you don't even need to do that, certainly not in London, I think. You just leave it. We used to do it more because our old flat was on a, you know, sort of quite a busy pedestrian thoroughfare. Where we live now, there's not really any through traffic. And we used to just call it the system. And for things like that, you just go, what are we going to do with this? Oh, I'll just put it out, see if the system will sort it. And, you know, and then I would come back in, and inevitably, sometimes a matter of minutes or hours, come back in and go, you know, those old shelves, they've gone. And we go, the system works. But I don't think, it wouldn't work here because there's not enough, we just don't get enough people walking past except the neighbours. And what they do is people in this neighbourhood, we've got a little WhatsApp group for the people on our street and the next street.
I've heard.
People will suddenly go, does anyone want this chair? And but sometimes the stuff they're putting on, they just go, honestly, just take it to the tip. It's visibly ruined.
It's so bad. You've really got to. And that's where I'm at. I'm there with that. After putting the roof back on the conservatory last week.
Oh, yeah. How did that go?
It was all right. I mean, it started raining while I was putting it all back together, but I've sort of bodged it back together again, so that's cool. Coming back from Somerset, I stayed overnight with my mum and dad for old time's sake while Chops drove a 7.5-ton Mercedes lorry back on her own.
I saw.
Absolute trooper of a woman. Unfazed.
And why did you have a 7.5-ton lorry for that live show weekend?
Couldn't fit it all in a normal van. And
What were you taking?
Mercedes.
You take the chairs?
Mercedes, yeah, took everything. Yeah. Chairs, merch, and all of the affiliated banners, flags.
Of course.
Everything.
Yes.
You name it, it was in there. But it wasn't full. Mm. It was just it was too much for a normal size van. And Mercedes trucks, bless them, they who have supported the previous Late Break Show live events, they were like, do you want to borrow a 7.5 tonner? And like, yeah, go on then, go on then. And the bloke that was going to drive it down while Chops drove the Jimny, he realised he was too young to drive it on his licence.
Oh,
because we've got the last of the old school, pre-Jan 97, I think.
Yeah.
Which means you can just get in a 7.5 tonne, bearing in mind this thing's like 12 feet tall, you can just get in it and go, yeah, okay, let's go. And that's precisely what Chops did. In fact, Chops has only ever driven it in the dark. She drove it in pitch dark down there and drove it in pitch dark back. So she's never driven it in the day. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That's the first time I drove a 7.5 tonner was when we were making
Sweet Love in a Verge.
No, we were making that Top Gear Ground Force charity special, and we had a 7.5 tonner.
I remember that.
To look like the Ground Force lorry. And suddenly it was like, well, we've got this lorry. It's outside. We'd rented it, I think. And it had been dropped off, and we'd had it all stickered up. And then went, right, who's going to drive it down? And all the researchers went, oh, we are too young to have the right kind of license to drive a 7.5 tonner.
We're all 14.
Yeah, I had to step up.
Was it Manuel? Good.
They're amusing, aren't they? Yeah, Manuel. No, it was quite old, man. Shabby. Once you get your eye in with them, they're fine. I've driven them since as well. It's quite like a 7.5 tonner. They're kind of like, it's like a mini Mars bar, isn't it? They're like sort of...
What you get the flavour, but it's not as much of a commitment as a king size.
You're not doing full 44 tonner on whilst off your head on pet pills and whatever else.
Well, I drove back
lorry
in the
drivers don't do anymore.
I drove back there and back in a much smaller truck called a Dodge Charger, and on the way down again drove it at night. I pulled into some services for a sort of a wee stop because we drove in convoy, and I could hear clunky noises coming from the back end, like the diff or the prop shaft. I was thinking, oh no, what's this? So I kind of drove very gingerly the rest of the way and thought I'll deal with that on Sunday when the show's all over. And ended up crawling under it. I mean, it was weird. I went back and stayed at mum and dad's, like old times, with my son. And in the morning, after breakfast, me, him, my dad, all went outside and put the car on wooden blocks and crawled on it underneath it. And it was basically like living at home again, like I used to, where my brother, me and my dad would crawl underneath the car to find out what was broken on it. And then we took it to the local garage. We thought we knew what was wrong with it. Yeah, it was missing a circlip. A circlip had come off on the prop shaft, and so there was a bit of slack, so it was sort of going out of vibration, it was out of balance, and it was vibing through the whole car, drumming.
Yeah,
so we sorted that, and then on the way home it turns out the alternator stopped working, but I was oblivious to it because I don't think the no charge light is working on the dash, so I didn't notice the voltage drop. And we were lucky. I just thought we'd pull into Corley services because I got to the point where I needed a wee, and I thought I'll just pull in. And honestly, as I pulled off onto the slip road to go into the services, the whole car died. Lights, power, everything. And I knocked it into neutral and I coasted right up to drive-through Starbucks. Went for a wee. And then got my torch out to work out what was going on. And I've got to say, at that point, I wasn't worried. I don't panic when I break down. I thought, I'll just see what's wrong. Let's see. This AA van came storming over with its lights flashing. You know, it's beacons.
Yeah.
And I'm not a member of the AA. And this guy got out and he said, look, I'm in between jobs, and until my computer bings to tell me where I've got to go next, I can give you a bit of my time. Do you want me to help? And he got his multimeters out and everything. And within about 3 or 4 minutes, he was like, your alternator's not putting out any charge. Your battery's showing 8 volts. There's your problem. You've probably been driving for the last hour and a half on just battery power, with lights on, with wipers on, because it was a bit, weather was cack.
Yeah.
So he charged, he gave me 20 minutes of charge off his van with a special kind of set of leads. And this is lovely and old school. He said, I think I've got breakdown cover, but it's not with the AA, unfortunately. He said, well, look, I've just given you 20 minutes of charge. It's showing 12 volts. Here's what you do. You got 60 miles to get home, because I told him where the town I lived. He said, drive home with no headlights behind a lorry. And you'll probably get home.
And that's why we're Britain's fourth emergency service.
No, look.
Because of our old school advice.
I'm not throwing the AA under a bus at all, because it was a fantastic idea. And I did do it. So
that's the thing. You're full old school. You make your own choices.
I went full old school, and I had my son in the car. And I was like, right, we've got running lights, which on an American car are orange on the front, as you probably know.
Mm.
So it just has two glowing orange domes on the front. And I thought, I drove one-handed with one hand on the rocker switch for the headlights all the way back, slipstreaming a lorry. And every time I felt like I needed to be really visible, I just put my lights on for a bit and then clicked them straight back off. And we managed to get home, and I put the car on charge. It was amazing. Put the car on charge this morning, and it was 8% charged according to my intelligent recharging device. So we just limped home, and I was so pleased. I've never concentrated that much in a long time. My eyes are incredible in the dark now. Amazing. Honestly, like owl vision.
And that is how Johnny Smith became Owl Man.
I look like a really shit bootlegger, you know, driving that charger without sufficient headlights. Don't get me wrong, if I saw a car coming the other way, or we were in a situation where it was pitch dark because there were no overhead lights, I did use the lights, but I just kept saving them every time we got to a junction where it was fully lit. But yeah,
I mean, were you going cross country at this point? Were you sort of out in the sticks?
Yeah, we broke down at Corley Services, which is on the M6, and we had to get onto the A14 to the A43, and on the A43 there's no overhead lights; it's just pitch dark. So that's when it gets tricky. That's when Johnny had to properly drive
a charger moving through the night with no headlights on.
Sinister.
It's quite a sinister thing.
It's it's more sinister than an Audi A7 with three guys in the back, I would say.
Or I've mentioned before that BMW E30 I used to see a lot of mornings when I was commuting to Watford many years ago, which always had four adult men in it. And I just thought, why is that so threatening? I don't know.
It's because it's just filled with purpose, isn't it? There's something going down.
Yes, what are you all up to? They're probably just car sharing, something perfectly innocent, but there's just... I mean, I don't think they were doing a bank job, because I used to see them quite regularly, unless they were repeatedly turning over the banks of the Hertfordshire area. But, just very, very, very intimidating. But, yeah, just can you imagine standing in a country lane and you hear on the breeze a low burble, and then... around the corner just come two orange lights, and you realise, you're like, what is that? Is that a lorry? They're very far apart, those lights. What is it? And then the charger.
It was exactly like that. But obviously I was really concentrating, because I wasn't on my own, and I just didn't want to do the whole, like... I said to him, I said, listen, we were lucky to break down off the motorway and coast into the services. I said, listen, if we break down, I'll just make sure we coast somewhere, because that car will coast for a very long time. So if you knock it into neutral, it's on American tyres, which, as you know, are good for many miles.
Rock hard,
yeah, exactly. So but it was great. We got home. I was really pleased, but I need to give it a bit of winter worship, that car.
Yeah,
I've used it a lot this year.
It's going to need a new alternator then, or at least to have it fixed.
Yeah, and this is the third alternator I've had in that car since I've owned the car. And bearing in mind, I haven't done that many miles in it, because it's not a car you annually rinse for mileage. It's ridiculous. And they're always American alternators, proud American alternators with very small letters, made in Mexico. And my brother's just like, listen, Johnny, they're dog shit. Just get it sent to an old... There's an old bloke he uses to do things like that, to rewind an alternator. So he said, just get it remade in England to a good spec, and then just put it on there, which is what I'm going to do, because I'm bored of buying another alternator, which is just crap quality.
Yeah, but it's frustrating. But
what was really good is, obviously, when the AA man went, listen, and you're driving an old car, but what I tell people with new cars is drive back using as few things as you can. He said, don't have the radio on. I said, doesn't matter, it doesn't have a radio, that's cool. Or just have one that works. I said, don't have anything on. Heater, fan, no, it's all right. The car gives out so much heat anyway, I don't need to use the fan. We drove back with nothing apart from, you know, like the tail lights and those little running lights, and that was it. But I do need to give it some winter worship now. It's done a lot this year, a lot of shows,
yeah,
a lot of miles. She's a good car. She had my back. She knew that she was ill, but she knew we could handle it. We got back. So big shout out to XS Power Batteries. That battery is a good battery. It held out.
Yeah, fair play. Yeah. Hey, talking of very large cars with V8 engines, smooth link, Rich, well done. I haven't told you about
that. Shaken Stevens has bought another car.
Yeah, this just in, Shaky's been spotted in a car dealership on a used car lot in Cardiff, padding around a Cadillac BLS. Very on brand for modern Shaky.
Oh, so. Wonderful. Wonderful, yeah.
No V8, obviously, but, you know, it is the 2.8 V6 turbo, so it's got a bit of poke. No, I haven't told you about the Bentley Mulsanne that I borrowed. Because, you know, I was... I was talking to the Bentley PR guy at the Late Break Show live in Manchester a few weeks ago. And we started talking about their heritage fleet, which he's in the process of sort of reinvigorating and trying to make sure that everything on it is tippity-top and runs and can be used when required. And he casually mentioned that the last Mulsanne press car they had on the fleet before that car stopped production, rather than sell it, they hung on to it and just put it onto the heritage fleet.
Did they?
And I said, it's funny, I love Mulsannes. I love the idea of them. And, you know, it was a few months ago, I was sort of getting a bit gooey about seeing ones for 40 grand and thinking I should buy one.
Tell me about it.
I said, I've never actually driven one. And he went, oh, well, you can borrow the heritage car if you want. That's, you know, it's there for using. And so I asked to borrow it when I was going to that event that I did with Alex Goy at Cafe in a Machine a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, you went there in that?
Well, I had it for the weekend, and then I took it to that on the Monday and had it for the couple of days into that week. And it is a magnificent car. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
What a thing. It's amazing how much you can sort of zoom about in it. I mean, it's big. It's comically big. I thought...
It is very big, yeah.
It was delivered to my house, and I could see it, but it was parked in such a way that I couldn't sort of see the full length of it. And then I went out in the dark to go and collect my kids from something, drove there, and parked up and thought, ooh, we're already very close to the wall behind me, and I feel like we're not in the space properly. But okay, never mind. Got the kids, opened the back doors to put the kids in, and I suddenly went, oh, right, it's the long wheelbase one. I didn't realise it was a long wheelbase. Then I checked, it's not. It's got a massive amount of room in the back, but it is just a long car. It's 2 feet longer than my Range Rover.
2 feet? And, you know, is it really? Wow.
Yeah, I think it's something like that. I looked this up because I was quite staggered at how long it was. But you can sling it around. It's quite remarkable how...
It's a driver's car.
Yeah.
It's the same as the Rolls Ghost. It's a surprisingly engaging car for the gentleman driver.
Yes.
Or gentle lady driver.
But there is a downside to this, and it is that they have given it quite weighty steering. I mean, steering's actually really good, and I think it's sort of, you know, it gives you a good sense of what's going on for a big car like that, and it's quite impressive in itself, and helps the fact that the sort of the accuracy of the steering and the feedback it gives you is enough that you sort of feel confident as you zoom about. But when I went to try and palm it, bit too much weight. Not a good palming car.
Too heavy to palm.
Too heavy to palm. You can, but it's just you need so much sort of palm purchase to be confident of doing a successful... You certainly can't twirl it in and out of a parking space in the way that I could in, say, my Range Rover or, you know, an old Jag or something. It's, it's not... That's the one mark against it. It's a poor palmer. But in all of the respects, it's absolutely
Robert
fabulous.
Would be disgusted, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Really let down by spec. That.
Mercy me. I've got to put a lot of effort into this.
But everything else about it is tremendous, including that engine is so torquey. I think it's got something like 811 pound feet of torque. It's insane.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's really. I remember being really impressed with it.
It's just so. And actually, what I also realised is you don't need to rev it. It does. It gets a little sort of gravelly if you rev it, but you don't need to. Why would you rev it? It's got all the torque you ever need. So, as a consequence, it's actually, unless you're really stropping on, you don't need to use the paddles. You just sort of leave it in auto, and it's perfectly good because you're never going to bog down out of a corner.
No, it's got to be the ultimate caravan car. not that anyone will.
I'm sure that was one of the main design parameters when they were coming up with it.
I was thinking, because the front of the Mole sign is a little bit awkward, isn't it, still? Which is a shame, because the sides and the back I do like.
Yeah.
And I was thinking the other day, that shape with the sort of slightly awkward headlights, imagine if they were under shutters, a bit like a Lincoln from the 70s, or even a Charger of some sort.
Yeah.
Imagine if they, or a Cord, let's go back to sort of pre-war.
Cord.
A Cord.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it could have that grill, the majestic grill, and quite pronounced front wings. They've got a really good shaped front wing.
Yeah.
But you could have the headlights hidden until you use them.
Interesting.
That could be good, couldn't it?
Because I know what you mean about the front of that car. It's grown on me since it was first announced. I remember when it came out, I kind of went, oh, are we sure about this? And then I saw one, and I kind of went, okay, yeah, maybe. And it's sort of grown on me, but it does have that, it looks slightly crestfallen. I mean, not as crestfallen as the current Golf, which is the most crestfallen car in history.
Oh, no, but that has the optional illuminating eyebrow, which I've seen a lot of lately.
Yes.
Of them coming towards you. And do you know what? They look so much better in the dark.
Do you know they've just put that monobrow on the Polo as well? Because I've just had a Polo press car. The facelifted Polo is out, and I've just borrowed one of those to review it. And it's got, I discovered this when I pulled up to park somewhere, and there was a window, a shop window, and I was like, oh, God. It's got monobrow.
So is it, hang on, is this Noel Gallagher's high visibility brows? What? He's at it again, isn't he? He's at it again. Even at night, you can
Noel
see it.
Noel Gallagher's
clearly.
Highly distinctive design feature. Except it's not, actually, is it? Because it's on the electric Mercedes as well, the EQ range. They all have monobrows, don't they, at night? And something else does as well, I saw recently. This is a trend, isn't it? It's going to become out of control.
I quite like that Mark 8 Golf brow, only because it's one of the few design features on the outside which you go, yeah, that's all right. Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of BMW's Angel Eyes, and in a world now where there's a lot of very sick looking BMWs, the Angel Eyes were such a masterstroke.
Yeah.
Weren't they so good? You didn't need to illuminate the grill. It just had, and they were very, very, quite scary, I thought, when they came up behind you on the motorway, the Angel Eyes, you'd go, oh, get out of the way. Get out. Move. And I like that. But I think BMW need to bring that kind of stuff back, that sort of subtlety that spoke volumes.
Well, that's the thing. They're willfully spunking away all of these quite distinctive features that they came up with and therefore are theirs to use at will. And other car companies would pour vinegar into their own eyes to have something like the Hofmeister kink or the Angel Eyes or the kidney grill. It's just so simple but effective as making people go, oh, right, that's a BMW. I knew that from 20 paces. And they're just sort of misusing them or throwing them away in a really odd way. I don't get it. I mean, the kidney thing, I know they've sort of gone the other way.
You could shrink the kidneys really right down, like a BMW M1, because they would have an intake lower down that was a little bit more subtle and possibly active.
Yeah.
You could go the other way, and I think it would have worked better completely the other way, shrinking them right down. And maybe you could backlight them if you were desperate.
Mm.
Or just go with the Angel Eyes.
Hey. I mean, what? Oh, actually, no, would that count, though? Because you're not allowed to have a light-up badge on the front of a car, certainly in Europe.
Is it a badge, though, or is it just
two
holes?
It's not. It's just a design feature, isn't it? It's a grill. Yeah, it's a grill.
That's like me having a small backlight in my tonsils, and I walk around everywhere with my mouth slightly open at night.
It's like someone's accidentally switched on the torch on their phone.
It's a backlit mouth. That's what it is. It's a backlit mouth.
But then what if you slept with your mouth open and your wife would be like, oh, God, this is worse than the snoring. he's lighting up the room because he's sleeping with his mouth open.
But it's okay because everyone in Munich will go, yeah, I like that. It's authentic.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like that could work really well.
But that's really the thing. Well. I sort of feel like these massive oversized kidneys, which I keep saying, and I'll stick to this, that they are not, in most cases, the worst parts of the cars they're attached to. I just think that sort of that really flabby 4 Series at the moment, it's just such a sort of tragic bit of design work that the beaver face thing is the least of its worries. But really oversizing a design feature, I always think, is like it marks a lack of confidence.
It does.
Do you remember when Citroen suddenly realised that their cars had become incredibly bland? So when they were facelifted, you know, sort of the Xantias and things, they gave them really massive chevron badges on the front, and it was just like, it's too late, lads, too late.
Yeah.
Don't overcompensate with a really big badge. And I think the same is true of
too
BMW.
Much. Sort of desperation, isn't it?
Well, it's the same with that.
For acceptance.
That bloody awful, what is it, the X2? Is the X2 the one that's got the really flat roof like a Rover 800, just looks toss? And it's got BMW badges on the D-pillars.
On the D-pillars in a recess?
Yeah.
Which actually would have been quite an expensive pressing, probably.
You'd think so, and it's an extra cost because it's extra badges, isn't it? You know, it's like if those badges cost, like, I don't know, 50p each, and you extrapolate that across 100,000 cars, whatever it would, every year they're making, it is actually an added expense they don't necessarily need. But I think it's because they kind of went, oh shit, this car's actually quite bland and indistinct and doesn't look like a BMW. Slap some old badges on, gang, that'll do it. And it's rather disappointing. Anyway, we could rag on BMW's current design disaster wankery all day, but let's not.
Design wankery.
What else was I going to talk to you about? Oh yeah, no, have you, you know, when you sort of realise how much of a dad you've become. And I was talking to a mate last night, and I was raving about I got a new bird feeder that the squirrels can't get at. And I'm so
bloody
delighted
hell,
with it. Yeah, and this mate of mine, he's one of the dads, one of my daughter's friend's dads, and he went, and he's younger than me, and he just went, is this an age thing? And I went, no, oh yeah, it probably is actually. It's extremely middle-aged. But what I've realised, I've never even spotted it. First of all, I often dad reverse, but also I've started doing this thing when the kids are in the car. When we pull up anywhere, particularly at home, I'll switch off the ignition and then go, right, or here we are, or something like that. I was like, where's this come from? Okay then. And it's like, what? It doesn't need any of these words.
This is partridgeism, isn't it?
Well,
it's,
it is.
There's a lot
yeah.
of... It's a partridgeism. You clap the hands together and go, right. And you switch on the courtesy lights if it doesn't put them on for you. You put it on as if, you know, as if you're a taxi driver and you're going to ask your kids for a bit of cash. Okay. The meter says 4. Let's just round it up to 5. I'll let it... I can do the receipt if you want, mate. It's entirely up to you.
I used to love that Mercedes have... or had, certainly, a button in the front that turned on just the rear courtesy lights.
Yes. I had a Merc with that.
It's a good, brilliant, solid Merc feature, isn't it? It's just I don't know if the smaller ones have it, but certainly the bigger Mercs do, because our CLS shooting brake had it, and it was actually quite brilliant for amusing. Yeah. Our boy, when he was a baby, we were on a long journey and he was getting a bit restless. We just basically flashed that back on and off, or just turn it on for a bit and then turn it off again, and it amused him no end.
No, it's a great idea.
That
it's
and
a great idea.
It's a great idea. I wonder is that just something where they kind of went, well, a lot of, you know, a certain of our cars are used as taxis, let's just put it in all of them, and then. Because it's a proper taxi feature, isn't it?
It is. It's probably just a type of switch which goes both ways rather than just going one way or something, isn't it? I'm a big fan of it. Are those little features though? They're so much better than gesture control or voice activated bollocks that you get on cars. I mean, honestly,
what, you've got voice activated bollocks now?
Oh, the
LED
the
tonsils and voice activated bollocks. You're a very high tech man these days.
Number of times you press a button on the steering wheel for voice, and then it'll go boop boop, yes, or whatever, and you'll go, put on Capital Radio and it'll just go, did you want to go to Carlisle? No, I most definitely didn't. Because if I did, I would have fucking said that.
Calling absolutely. Chris Wilson. What? No.
Yeah, no. Not a thing. Not a thing. It's just tech slurry. It's now, tech slurry that needs to be just tipped away.
On that note, a friend of ours, yeah. Tom Barnard, we both know, wrote in after last week's podcast, and he said that our chat about bitter and German words. By the way, a chap on Twitter whose name I'm not going to be able to find now, who is German, or at least a German speaker, said that my assertion that the car company bitter sounds like you'd just be saying please in German. He said it doesn't work like that. The word bitter is the word bitter in German, and bitter is pronounced, the please word is pronounced differently, or at least is it something. He said a German speaker would be able to tell the difference, so it doesn't work.
So there's a slight intonation difference,
I guess, so.
It's clipped or something.
Yeah. That's like a friend of mine whose parents are Chinese said that there's lots of words in Chinese that they're very subtle intonation differences that completely alter the meaning. And I think she said one of them was like shoes and vagina are basically the same word, but it's different intonation. I apologise.
Seriously?
This is something I was told a long time ago.
Shoes and vag?
Something like that. If anyone is a Mandarin speaker and this rings a bell, please get in touch. Otherwise, because I feel like I might be talking rubbish. Now, there was something where it's like two quite common words, but with very different meanings, and it's all on the intonation.
My gosh.
So our mate Tom wrote in. He said, back in 2000, I had a Mercedes S55 on test, and it had the first voice-activated phone system. You had to slot in your own SIM, but the car would dial numbers for you, not from the phone book. You'd have to shout out the numerals, say dial, and it would do it. It worked perfectly and was the cause of much amazement, unless you said the number 9. Being German, it thought you were saying no and cancelled the whole operation.
Oh, no.
So you could call any number in the world as long as it had no 9s in it. This would have been a big issue if a kidnapper had tied your hands behind your back and you wanted to alert the police.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Just sound like Margaret Thatcher going, no. Now, this is our first ever father and son correspondence corner because... Oh. It was Tom's dad, who's our 84-year-old listener that we referenced a couple of weeks ago. Tom's dad had the
Resto Mod Mower.
The Resto Mod Mower. So I said to Tom, "Could we have the full story, please?" And from Mr. Barnard Senior comes the news that in 1953, when he was at school, the groundsman at his school had a knackered Dennis lawnmower, and Spurs, the football team, wanted to use the school's playing field for an event because it was next door to their training ground. In exchange for this, the owner of JAP Motorcycles, which was nearby and somehow linked to Spurs, offered to service the mower. This servicing seemed to consist of bolting in a leftover Speedway bike engine.
What?
Its mowing debut attracted a crowd of boys. The thing started first time, which was unusual in itself. The groundsman then adjusted the throttle to his usual mowing position and watched in horror as it shot off across the field, through a hedge and halfway up a tree.
No way, it was that potent.
Yeah.
They do use JAP engines, a lot of the Speedway bikes, yeah. And Morgan three-wheelers used to use JAP engines too.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. The pre-war ones. I think they used two different engines, depending on either era or power output. I can't remember, and I'm sure a listener will know.
Yeah.
But one of them was a JAP motor.
Sorry, I thought you meant the modern.
Not the modern one.
Because they use what's the name of the?
They
engine?
Use an S&S Smith and Sniff engine. They use a Smith and Sniff 2-liter V twin, don't they?
Yeah,
Off of Harley Davidson derivatives.
That's right. Yes. What is it? S&S is
it's S&S. They're an aftermarket kind of Harley. Sort of affiliated company. I've always thought that we should have a logo made that looks really similar to theirs.
Yeah, because that always ends well.
It always ends well. And of course, there's such a crossover in product between what we do and what S&S do.
Yeah, yeah. Our range of engines for Harleys is going really well.
Amazing. Yeah. Or as a non-Harley rider, and you're not a Harley rider either.
No.
Maybe we could just get S&S to put S&S engines in other things for us.
Lawnmowers.
Lawnmowers. There we go. God, that would be absolutely... I had a bloke come up to me at the show and say, I've got the same mower as you. British Army lawn rider. Awesome. Basically high-fived him and went, and I said to him, I said, is it as lethal as mine? He went, oh yeah, it's awful. It tries to take your feet off every time you turn. I went, yeah, yeah, like properly dangerous. He went, oh yeah, it's not trustworthy. But it's great. It looks great. Honestly, it's the silliest mower. It looks great, but you just can't trust using it.
That's two more from Johnny Smith's untrustworthy lawnmower later. we should wrap this up, I suppose. And
yeah, Shakin' Stevens has come in with his cylinder shutdown Seville.
It's running on five.
Snow is falling. Yeah,
sounds like a sort of B-side quattro.
Imagine hearing that coming through the Welsh forests.
Yeah, it would be,
wow. Oh gosh, it's shaky in a terminal understeer.
Yeah, is that, wow, is that Hannu Mikkola? No, it's shaky in his Cadillac, desperately trying to get to a pub gig.
See the black ice signs. Yeah, terrible.
Before we go, three things to tell you. One, Johnny's got a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Late Break Show. What are you doing over Christmas? Are you still putting vids out?
Yeah, we're gonna put a few videos out. We've got let me think. Just trying to think when this goes out. I think we have the exclusive on the MST Mark I, definitely not a Ford Escort feature, which was quite special. I drove it on cut slicks around Snowdonia and it started to snow. So
were you sliding like shaky?
I was jerking like shaky as well. I was terrified and I managed to get it home okay. Yeah, we definitely did a left-right-left manoeuvre when we didn't want to. But it was all okay. It's all okay, guys.
Good.
And it's a stunning build. It's imagine what Welsh people would have done to a Ford Escort if they were Singer. It's kind of like that, really.
Imagine if Singer was Welsh and did Ford Escorts.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's the better way of saying it.
It's a tantalising prospect. Second thing I've got to tell you is I have various books out. If you've got Amazon Prime and you get in quick and you're listening to this on the Monday that it goes out, you might still squeak in one of my books for Christmas for somebody else or just for yourself. The latest one is called Boring Car Trivia 3. It's packed with arcane information about cars.
It's a good book.
And the third thing I've got to tell you is topically, because it's almost Christmas, the song Do They Know It's Christmas, famously recorded at very short notice on one day. There are, however, two Americans on that track as it was recorded on the day. One of them is Jodie Watley, who some of you might remember as a singer, who is American but was living in London at the time. The other Americans that are on that record that very few people realise are Kool and the Gang.
Kool and the Gang were on Do They Know It's Christmas?
Kool and the Gang are on Do They Know It's Christmas because they happened to be in the UK at the time and they were on the same label, Phonogram, as Bob Geldof. And they were in the Phonogram offices when Geldof came in his rumbustious, sweary style to pitch that he was going to do this charity record right now and pulled together all the biggest stars in pop in Britain.
Really?
And Kool and the Gang went, hey, we'll take part.
That's amazing. I did not... Does anybody hear them? Or?
No, they don't seem to get a solo or anything. I mean, but they are... If you look at the artist listing, they are on there. And actually, there's an interview out there somewhere, which I'll put on the Patreon in the show notes, of people's recollections of making that. And you know, sort of famously, Bono wasn't very comfortable with the tonight, thank God it's them instead of you, because he thought it was a bit of a twatty thing to say.
Yes.
And Geldof and Midge-Ure kind of talked him round, and then he gave that incredible performance of it and made it one of the standout lines of the song. But apparently the guy from Kool and the Gang, whose name escapes me, also didn't like that line and is quoted in this piece as going, yeah, I never liked that line, thought it was terrible.
Oh gosh!
So yeah, he was there.
Status Quo were in it as well, but you don't really hear them. I don't know if they actually sung. I think they just went there and drank.
Yeah, brought a bag of naughtiness, apparently, some South American pick-me-ups that apparently got things moving, as was famously their fondness at the time. No, there's another story about that, that they were supposed to do the... I think they were going to do that sort of middle-80 bit, the here's to you with the... And it turns out that Midge-Ure hadn't really checked on how good Status Quo were at harmonies, and they weren't very good. And Francis Rossi had to sort of take him on one side and go, look, Midge, I do most of the singing. Rick is really not a singer in the studio sense of the word. And so that's why we struggled to do harmony. So someone else did it in the
end. Oh, my gosh. Well, there you go. So yeah,
there we go. So
they stood at the back with Sherbet Dib Dabs, didn't they?
Basically, yes.
And then, yeah. I like the fact that we've started this podcast talking about Shakin' Stevens. And I think he actually... postponed releasing that Christmas song because of this song, Do They Know It's Christmas?
Yeah.
He was going to put it out in the same year, the same Christmas era, and then thought, no, I'm not going to try and compete with that, and it's a charity record, so I'll hold it back for a year later.
Now then, a bit of housekeeping before we go as well. If you're listening to this the day it comes out, it's the 20th of December. It's almost Christmas! Or piss flaps, if you prefer. So that's it for us for this year. We're going to take a break next week, so there'll be no show out on the 27th. The following week, I'm going to put out a compilation show of some bits from our old YouTube videos.
And
see how that goes. That'll be out on the 3rd of January, and then we'll be back after that.
Yeah, we will.
On the 10th.
Still talking about Christmas songs, obviously.
Still talking about Christmas songs, and still talking absolute fizzy arse water, as usual.
I just want to say thanks to all our... thanks very much to all the comments that come through to say how much they enjoy listening. And thanks to everyone who is a patron for the Smith & Stiff podcast. That's really, really helpful and welcomed. And I hope you all have a really lovely Christmas, a sweet, sweet. And if you're driving home for Christmas, obviously you have to just get some brushes on the drums whilst you're trying to light a cigarette.
Do make sure the piano is very tinkly.
Ding, ding, ding. Yes, make sure the person in the passenger seat's got that tiny little piano ready, and make sure you're skidding around on very loose ground while you're trying to light the cig and do the brushes
shaky.
On the drums.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. But as Johnny said, thank you ever so much for listening this year. We really do appreciate your support. It's not always been an easy year for any of us, I suppose, but we do appreciate that you give us some of your time. So hopefully that will continue next year. But until then, Merry Christmas, everybody. Goodbye.
Merry Christmas.
It's piss flaps.
I've never heard that before. It's brilliant. It's piss flaps. Do they know it's piss flaps?
Do they know it's piss flaps? simply having a wonderful piss flaps day.
It's just so stupid. All I want for piss flaps is you. Yeah, that's it. That's a
last piss flaps. I gave you my heart.
Oh gosh. Okay. It's brilliant.
Right, let's do an opening thing.
He's making a list, but in his head, because he hasn't got a pen, he's going to forget.
Santa Claus is very disorganised. Okay. I'm Richard Porter, and this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and Christmassy things as well.
And Shakin' Stevens. Shaking.
We're going to do another one. And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and a little bit too much about Shakin' Stevens.
Oh, gosh.
Give me brilliant. An I'm Johnny Smith.
And I'm Johnny Smith. I'm Johnny Smith.
What?
Did I just did two like a newsreader? Fuck you, San Diego.
Right.
I'm Johnny Smith.